and all others who are responsible for their own misfortunes. But I must stop this preamble and approach the problem under consideration. Men say, the happy life consists in upright conduct. Precepts guide one to upright conduct. Therefore, precepts are sufficient for attaining the happy life. But they do not always guide us to upright conduct. This occurs only when the will is receptive, and sometimes they are applied in vain when wrong opinions obsess the soul. Furthermore, a man may act rightly without knowing that he is acting rightly. For nobody, except he be trained from the start and equipped with complete reason, can develop to perfect proportions, understanding when he should do certain things, and to what extent, and in whose company, and how, and why. Without such training, a man cannot strive with all his heart after that which is honorable, or even with steadiness or gladness, but will ever be looking back and wavering. It is also said, if honorable conduct results from precepts, then precepts are amply sufficient for the happy life. But the first of these statements is true, therefore the second is true also. We shall reply to these words that honorable conduct is, to be sure, brought about by precepts, but not by precepts alone. Then comes the reply, if the other arts are content with precepts, wisdom will also be content therewith. For wisdom itself is an art of living, and yet the pilot is made by precepts, which tell him thus and so to turn the tiller, set his sails, make use of a fair wind, tack, make the best of shifting and variable breezes, all in the proper manner. Other craftsmen also are drilled by precepts. Hence, precepts will be able to accomplish the same result in the case of our craftsmen in the art of living. Now, all these arts are concerned with the tools of life, but not with life as a whole. Hence, there is much to clog these arts from without and to complicate them, such as hope, greed, fear. But that art, which professes to teach the art of life, cannot be forbidden by any circumstance from exercising its functions, for it shakes off complications and pierces through obstacles. Would you like to know how unlike its status is to the other arts? In the case of the latter, it is more pardonable to err voluntarily rather than by accident. But in the case of wisdom, the worst fault is to commit sin willfully. I mean something like this. A scholar will blush for shame, not if he makes a grammatical blunder intentionally, but if he makes it unintentionally. If a physician does not recognize that his patient is failing, he is a much poorer practitioner than if he recognizes the fact and conceals his knowledge. But in this art of living, a voluntary mistake is the more shameful. Furthermore, many arts, I am the most liberal of them all, have their special doctrine, and not mere precepts of advice. The medical profession, for example. There are the different schools of Hippocrates, of Asclepiades, of Themison. And besides, no art that concerns itself with theories can exist without its own doctrines. The Greeks call them dogmas, while we Romans may use the term doctrines, or tenets, or adopted principles, such as you will find in geometry or astronomy. But philosophy is both theoretic and practical. It contemplates and, at the same time, acts. You are indeed mistaken if you think that philosophy offers you nothing but worldly assistance. Her aspirations are loftier than that. She cries, I investigate the whole universe, nor am I content keeping myself within a mortal dwelling to give you favorable or unfavorable advice. Great matters invite, and such as are set far above you. In the words of Lucretius, to thee shall I reveal the ways of heaven, and the gods, spreading before thine eyes the atoms, whence all things are brought to birth, increased and fostered by creative power, and eke their end when nature casts them off. Philosophy, therefore, being theoretic, must have her doctrines. And why? Because no man can duly perform right actions except one who has been entrusted with reason, which will enable him, in all cases, to fulfill all the categories of duty. These categories he cannot observe unless he receives precepts for every occasion, and not for the present alone. Precepts, by themselves, are weak and, so to speak, rootless, if they be assigned to the parts and not to the whole.